live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard this week's edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend in March, wherever you happen to be. Of course, as you know, we live on airplanes, and we've been crisscrossing the world, not only just north and south, but east and west. Get out your maps, boys and girls. 25 degrees, 5 minutes north, 77 degrees, 21 minutes west. We are coming to you from Cable Beach in Nassau in the Bahamas, and more specifically from the Super Club's Breezes Hotel in the Bahamas. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. So much to talk about in the news this week. Of course, still the fallout from what's going on in Japan. The news keeps getting worse before it gets better. More evacuations required for people living closer to that nuclear plant. Some effects of radiation noted in water supply and in vegetables and fruit. It's a bad situation. There's no doubt about it. And the ripple effects from this, forgetting just the societal effects and the people who have been displaced and all the work that needs to be done there, which we're going to be talking about later on in the show and throughout the show, but also the ripple effects economically in terms of travel and tourism worldwide. I mean, people forget that a tourism slump in Japan doesn't just stay in Japan. Japanese tourists spent about $13 billion last year in the U.S., or about, get this, $4,000 per visitor. They're not going anywhere right now. And business travel to Japan, equally down in a slump. Airlines have not necessarily canceled their flights there, but they're not flying full. They're certainly not flying full in coach. Business class is about half full. You're going to start seeing, obviously, some discounts. The smarter business travelers, believe it or not, will continue to go because places like Tokyo have not been directly affected. Indirectly, yes. Directly, no. And they will continue to make their trips there. And you will see all sorts of incentives coming online in the next 2 months to encourage people to go, even as business travelers, not necessarily as tourists, because the tourist market, of course, is completely evaporated, which is, by the way, one of the reasons to go to southern Japan right now, which has not been affected at all. It's no different than the advice I gave to folks going to Egypt right in the wake of the disruptions there. Same thing in terms of Jordan, same things in terms of what would just happen in Israel with the bombing the other day at the bus station. Smart travelers who have a world view of things, who pack common sense and a little bit of intelligence, can always go at a time like this and have a great time. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. And I encourage you to go to our website, petergreenberg.com, and I'll be doing this throughout the show because there's a comprehensive list there of aid and relief organizations doing that essential hard work in Japan. And very much like Haiti, we're talking about a rebuilding effort that will take years. Now, the infrastructure isn't set up yet for you to go take a volunteer vacation in Japan. Most of the people who are there now are professional relief and aid workers. However, within the next 3 to 4 weeks, and we will be on top of the story, obviously, within the next 3 to 4 weeks, there will be that infrastructure in place so that by this summer you can effectively plan a tremendously beneficial volunteer vacation for yourself, for your kids, for your family, for a week to 3 weeks where you can actually go and do good work. And whether you're a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, a lawyer, a teacher, a doctor, a ditch digger, it doesn't matter. We each have something that we can bring to the party. And it's no big party over there. They need us. And this will be, it'll be opening up very, very soon. And when it does, we will be right on top of that. But until it does, go to our website because you can look at all the organizations and their websites and contact numbers to see how you can get involved before you go there. And then, of course, how you can get involved by going there. Another issue happening right now. Remember, we're coming to you from the Bahamas. Just like Hawaii is so dependent on Japanese tourism, the Bahamas is so dependent on airlift from the United States, including Miami. And for those of you who've been watching the news this week, you know what happened at the Miami airport a couple of days ago. Their fuel park, meaning where they store all their fuel for planes, basically blew up. Huge fire, knocked out all the pumps, and they had to switch to manual. Manual means individual fuel trucks driving from God knows where to get to the airport to refuel planes. As a result of that, earlier this week, American Airlines canceling virtually almost all of their flights in and out of Miami, which means anything going to the south in the Caribbean, anything going further south to South America. My flight from New York to Miami was canceled on American. I ended up going from JFK nonstop to the Bahamas on JetBlue. Great flight. But I was able to get like the last seat because, as we all know, this is spring break. In fact, this hotel at Breezes is totally full this week. If you want to know if the economy is tough, just take a look at the Bahamas. Every hotel here, full. The prices are pretty reasonable, but still full. In any case, the disruptions in Miami will continue for at least the next week and a half. I'll be monitoring it myself because I'll be trying to fly out of the Bahamas back to the U.S. I was originally booked on American. We will see. Plan B, C, and D about to kick in because no fuel, no planes. As simple as that. And by the way, here's one. Asleep at the wheel. It happened earlier this week at the control tower at Reagan. Two planes, one an American flight, one a United flight, landing late at night. Couldn't even raise the tower on the radio. You want to know why? Only one controller up there, and he was asleep. Hello? We're landing now. Now, this is nothing that we should be surprised about. If you saw my piece on CBS News earlier in the year, you saw what we talked about. The staffing levels of air traffic controllers is about 17% below what it should be. That's been the case for a while. We had that terrible fatal accident. In this case, nobody died. The planes both landed safely. But we had that terrible fatal accident in Kentucky a couple of years ago where there was only one controller in the tower and he was distracted and never bothered to see that the plane had lined up to go off the wrong runway. And, of course, he crashed and a lot of people died. In the wake of this incident, I love this. The FAA administrator, Randy Babbitt, ordered a thorough review of air traffic controlling staffing policies. You don't need a thorough review. You're 17% under what you should be. And the policy is you can't have one guy work in the tower. You need two. Now, to put things in perspective, we're not talking about the air traffic control tower that hands planes off in the sky to other air traffic control centers. We're talking about the tower at Reagan, which basically handles approach and departure and handles ground. Now, in this situation, thank God there was not a lot of traffic in the air at about midnight when both these planes are trying to land. The pilots basically did a go-around and landed on their own. But it did bring up a point, which we've been yelling about for a long time, that the staffing levels are way too low. And if you want to be an air traffic controller, you can't go to the Columbia School of Air Traffic Control. It takes you like 3 years before they even let you sit at a board. But we'll be talking about that with our next guest coming up after the break, our good pal Scott McCartney, the travel editor for the Wall Street Journal. Asleep in the tower. But don't you go to sleep because we got a whole lot more coming from the Super Club's Breezes Hotel in the Bahamas. Back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you on this weekend in March. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. As we said at the top of the show, we're coming to you from the Super Club's Breezes Resort in the Bahamas. And for those of you who are geographically challenged, more than 700 islands make up the Bahamas. And they stretch from the Grand Bahama Island, about 75 miles east of Palm Beach, Florida, all the way to Granada, which is about 60 miles to the northeast of Cuba. And, of course, we're in Cable Beach in Nassau, which, of course, is the capital of the Bahamas. And we'll be talking a little about that later in the show. But as I promised you, we got lots of things to talk about in the news. First, let's go to the phones. We got Joy coming, calling from Beverly Hills. Hey, Joy.
Hi, good morning. Peter, I was wondering if you could give me the email address that I need to make a reservation for the Last Supper in Milan.
For the Last Supper in Milan? What do you mean?
The painting, the Last Supper, you need to...
Oh, okay, I thought there was a restaurant you were going to. What do
oh,
I know?
No, you're absolutely right. Okay, that could be... No, I want the painting at the monastery.
I got you. Well, the painting doesn't have an email, darling, but I'll tell you what we can do. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com, and we'll do better than that. We'll tell you about the guides that you need to hire, which are not expensive, that will get you in ahead of the crowds. How about that?
That I already have the information of. I just need to make the reservation. So, okay. Listen, thank you very much. It was difficult to get a hold of you. I want to let you know.
Difficult to get a hold of me? We're on the air live, and you called me.
Well, I called you last week. Nobody answered, and also
no.
I emailed you. Nobody answered my email, and I called on the recording, and nobody answered my recording request either.
Well, you know what? We'll get right on that. But at least you got me live, and thank you for calling. I think that was Joy. All right. Joy's going to the Last Supper. That was my last phone call. No, it wasn't, because my next phone call is a good friend of the show, the travel editor of the Wall Street Journal, and the author of the Wall Street Journal Guide to Power Travel. Maybe he can get her a reservation at the Last Supper. How are you, Scott? Scott McCartney.
I'm good, Peter. I hope I haven't had my Last Supper.
No. But Joy was treating me like an airline.
Yeah.
We take all the reservations here. Boy, so much stuff in the news. I don't even know where to start with you. But let's start with what I just talked about the guy being asleep at the control tower at Reagan.
Well, it's a little bit scary. I think more scary for people who aren't pilots, who don't necessarily know how things work. But this kind of stuff just shouldn't happen. And fatigue in control towers has been an issue before. The thing that troubles me about it is this was looked at very closely after the Lexington, Kentucky Comair crash, where a controller had been on duty for a long time, was working as a single controller, and wasn't paying attention to the aircraft, and the aircraft took off on the wrong runway, didn't have enough room, and crashed. And here you have a controller dozing off. After the Lexington crash, the FAA said, "Oh, we're going to have a big look at this issue. We have to do something about it." And yet here, the nation's capital, we find, well, there's a single controller working four straight overnight shifts, and he dozed off at what could have been a critical moment.
You know, Scott, it's interesting because Randy Babbitt, the administrator of the FAA, announces a sweeping review of staffing policies. Well, hello, News Bulletin. You're understaffed to begin with. This goes back to 1981 when Reagan fired the original air traffic controllers. They hired all their replacements. Well, 25 years later, by 2006, those guys were retiring. And the FAA had moved at glacier-like speed to ramp up their hiring to be able to replace them. And as anybody who knows airlines knows, or I should say air traffic control knows, you can't go to the Columbia School of Air Traffic Control, fill out the back of a matchbook, and become an air traffic controller. It's going to take you at least 3 years working with a supervisor before they'll ever let you even sit at the control board by yourself. I mean, it's not an easy job. It's a high-stress job. And we're talking about whether you're a ground controller or a tower controller at the airport or an air traffic control center controller. Either way, you don't need a sweeping review of your staffing policies to realize you're understaffed.
Well, I think that's right. I think there are some schools that are pumping out a lot of controllers. Some make it and some don't. It is high stress. I was up at the control tower at Kennedy Airport in New York talking to them about something else not too long ago. They have a bunch of trainees up there, and the supervisor of the tower said they're doing a good job. They're good controllers. So I think there's a lot of hope for the next generation of controllers, especially kids who have grown up on video games. There's some similarity for air traffic control. But, the thing about aviation is you have to have redundancy to have safety. And everything that's in the airplane, there's at least two of that's critical, often three and four. So you have backups when something fails. And I think you can, sometimes the FAA would look at a control tower like Washington Reagan and say, from midnight to 5 a.m., You only have 10 flights or so out of that whole period, so one controller can certainly handle it. And that's true, one controller can handle it, but you need the redundancy. You need the backup. You need to, you know, have somebody to talk to and double-check you and make sure that you're not nodding off.
Well, you know, the way I look at it, I do it as akin to the, you know, to the baseball leagues. In the baseball leagues, you have the minor leagues and the major leagues. In the air traffic control system, you only have the major leagues. So, you know, the farm club doesn't work. You can't ask a high school kid to pitch the bottom of the ninth inning in the World Series and expect them to throw a perfect game. So you need that training, and I'm glad that they told you that the rookies are doing okay, but I guarantee you those rookies weren't sitting at a control board by themselves.
No, of course. And you do get there is some hierarchy. You can certainly start out at airports that aren't busy, start out at private aviation airports and sort of work your way up. It's you know, generally you're not going to be plopped into the O'Hare approach control, you know, hottest seat in the building right away. You may spend some time out at DuPage or some other.
Exactly.
Airport.
I would like to refer all of our listeners, if they can go to YouTube or get the original series on Saturday Night Live, to when Robert Klein hosted Saturday Night Live in the 70s and did his impression of Jerry Lewis as the nutty air traffic controller. And I'm telling you, it was great. Mr. Blaman, Mr. Klayman, you can land. It's okay. Please don't hurt me. I mean, you have to see that video. It is one of the funniest things ever. In any case, let's shift gears because we're going to go on one of my favorite topics, which is, of course, redeeming frequent flyer miles. You've talked about this in one of your columns about basically gambling with your frequent flyer miles. I think the airlines have reached the point of critical mass where they realize that what's the point of a loyalty program that doesn't reward you for your loyalty? And if you're filling 87% of your seats, there's not a big incentive on the part of the airlines to get rid of a frequent flyer mile and displace revenue passengers. So they're trying to come up with other ways, anything other than putting you on a plane so you can redeem your miles. And some of it's pretty silly.
Well, some of it is pretty silly. Piqued my interest because I saw mention of plastic surgery for frequent flyer miles.
I saw that. Yeah, it's a guy named Vern in Encino.
No, you can get a facelift from Finnair. Although Finnair said they didn't have a lot of takers for the airline facelift, and so they were probably going to drop it. But you're right. Airlines are really scrambling to find ways to get people to spend their miles on something other than seats. Merchandise is a good thing. And for, you know, road warriors who have tons and tons of miles and the last thing they want to do is take another trip, the opportunity to buy, you know, headphones or television or a necklace for your wife or designer sunglasses or whatever it might be. In the case of Hawaiian Airlines, you can get gambling chips at a casino and try and leverage the value of your miles that way.
And the best one for me, though, I have to tell you, if you do the math and you realize that about 54% of all mileage earned these days is earned on the ground, where you get 1 mile per dollar spent, that means if just for a regular 25,000-mile award, you've probably spent about $14,000 exclusive of what you spent for your airline tickets. Now, when the airline says to you, oh, for 6,500 miles, you can redeem those for a box of Godiva chocolates. Well, you know what, Scott? We went out and bought the chocolates. You know what they cost? $40. And there were 18 pieces of chocolate in the box that for 6,500 miles, which meant you spent about $3,700. And then you divide the 18 pieces of chocolate into the $3,700. That's one piece of expensive chocolate you're about to eat.
Yeah, the value of redemption is not very good, and I think this is a real problem for the industry. You know, if you look at the miles as though they're gravy, and you don't put a value on them, then that's what the airline is hoping. If you do stop and say, hey, wait a minute, I'm only getting a penny per mile value out of that. I ought to do better than that.
Well, you know what? You're right, and we do better every time we listen to you, Scott McCartney. How about that for a segue? The author of the Wall Street Journal Guide to Power Travel. We love it when you're on the air. Thanks, Scott. And we'll be back with more from the Super Club's breezes in the Bahamas right after this. So that won't cost you any miles.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you on this last weekend in March, coming to you from the Super Clubs Breezes Resort in the Bahamas. And as I said at the top of the show, we're dealing with an island chain of about 600, actually almost 700 islands, that stretches quite a distance and loaded with history, from tribal Indians to pirates, from explorers to slave traders. We have centuries of rich history here, and of course, we can't come to a location without learning some of that. And yet, isn't it ironic that most travelers who come to the Bahamas, you know, they stay at a resort, including this one, and they never, ever leave the property to get out there and actually see the history. So we'll take a little tour today with our good pal, Dr. Gail Saunders, who's former president of the Bahamas Historical Society, so she knows a little bit about the history. So how am I doing with slave traders and pirates? So far, so good?
Yeah, you're okay. Yeah.
I'm just okay?
On target.
I'm on target. But really, I mean, when people forget that in 1700, the Bahamas were ruled by pirates.
Yes, until 1718, when Woodes Rogers was sent by, he was a British governor, royal governor, and he actually he had a dozen of the pirates executed, and he brought, he expelled the pirates and restored commerce. That was our first actual motto of the Bahamas.
Which was?
Expulsus piratas, commercia restituta.
Really? So get rid of the pirates and business as usual.
Yes.
I got it.
But some people don't think that we got rid of all the pirates. So.
Well, you tell me.
Well, because our history, I suppose, after piracy, we had blockade running in the 1860s and then prohibition in the 20s.
So there's always been some form of piracy.
Some form of piracy, yes.
And today it's probably... probably liquor. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, no, during Prohibition, yeah. But, I mean, liquor is sold, but not, you know, Prohibition was a special thing when, as you know, it was forbidden to manufacture or drink or to bring liquor into the United States. But Nassau was used as a port that was so very close, Nassau and Bimini and Grand Bahama.
So you were the transshipment point for all the rum runners, if you
yes.
will.
Yes. Not many Bahamians actually ran the rum. But they were liquor merchants. But a couple of them probably did run it into states.
Well, the money was too good.
Yeah, and a lot of money was made during those years, and it, you know, it really changed the Bahamas, because in the 20s and 30s we had the development of tourism, and tourism by what the late 1940s. Really became the major industry. Sir Stafford Sands, who was the first Minister of Tourism, changed it from elite tourism to a more mass tourism, and really it's lasted until today. It's very, it sustained the Bahamas, really. Tourism is our chief industry.
And yet, you really have to look. Once you look and find it, it's great, but you have to look and find the history here, don't you?
Yeah,
you have to look a little. You have to look a little carefully. I mean, you've got stuff dating back to the 14th century, right?
Well, yeah, but that was brought in. It was brought in actually by Huntington Hartford, who was
the Cloisters.
Yeah, the Cloisters, AP heir to the AP fortune.
Now that's over at Paradise Island, isn't it?
Yeah, he bought a big acreage at Paradise Island.
I mean, we look at the history of Paradise Island. Most people, you know, think, oh my goodness, that's where Atlantis is now. And but originally it was Huntington Hartford, and then it became Merv Griffin.
That's right.
And then of course became Saul Kirzner with Atlantis. Kirzner. But they kept the Cloisters.
They kept it, and in fact. Yeah, it was really rebuilt under the ownership of Huntington Hartford. He got a stonemason to come in. The thing is, it was bought first by Randolph Hearst and left in Florida, and then Huntington Hartford actually bought it. But when they
This is a 14th century French monastery.
Yes, but when they brought it to Paradise Island, there was no plan on how it should be done. So this... stonemason, he he took a year to reconstruct it, but it's beautiful.
I've been over there. It's great.
Yeah.
But you got to look for it. It's you don't see it when you first walk in.
No, it's in the gardens. Near the Versailles Gardens, and it's very well laid out. Yeah.
What would you say is the probably the biggest surprise historically for people visiting the Bahamas? The thing they're not expecting to see, that if I were coming here for the very first time, you'd want me to see it.
I don't know. Maybe they're the fourth. I suppose the cloisters. You don't expect to see a 14th century ruin reconstructed at the main touristic center, you know, on Paradise Island. That's one thing. We have three major forts here: Montague, Fort Charlotte, Fort Finn Castle,
built by the British.
Under Lord Dunmore,
right.
Who was governor during the Loyalist period. Yeah,
right.
There are many sort of surprises, I suppose, out of New Providence. In the family of islands, it used to be called Out Islands, where we have Loyalist village. Really, they've been preserved. They're beautifully built structures that takes us back to the late 1700s, early 1800s.
All right, Dr. Gail Saunders, our historian of the week from the Bahamas. And I tell you, go check out the cloisters. You will be pleasantly surprised how a 14th century French monastery found its way to the Bahamas. Back from the Bahamas and the Super Cubs in Breezes right after this.
Talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Super Clubs at Breezes in the Bahamas, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER, and if you can't get through on the phones, email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. Earlier on the show, Joy called up and said she couldn't get through, and she couldn't get through an email, which I find hard to believe. However, Joy, I have one more answer for you in terms of the Last Supper, and that is this is an opportunity to use the concierge at a hotel for even if you're not staying there. I would go to the Park Hyatt Hotel in Milan, which is right next to the Duomo, ask to speak to the concierge there, and they will make the reservation for you. They will act on your behalf, and just go back there and shake hands with them and maybe give them a tip when you get to Milan. That's how I would do it. Earlier this month, of course, the devastating earthquake and the resulting tsunami that not only hit Japan, but Hawaii and parts of the United States. I remember that morning getting a phone call a little bit after midnight from someone, and I live on a boat in Los Angeles, and from someone who said, get up, there's a tsunami heading for California. So we were all at the docks doing everything we could to tie the boats, but of course our docks are floating docks, which means not a lot of stuff can be done, because when the dock goes, you go. Luckily for us, the wave did not hit Southern California, but it went up north into places like Oregon. And joining me now on the phone, a good pal of the show, we've been up to his location. He's the director of the Surf Sand Resort in Cannon Beach, Oregon, but near and dear to me, he's also a fellow volunteer firefighter. It's Chad Sweet. Hey, Chad.
Hello, Peter. How are you doing, my friend?
Well, you tell me. How are you guys doing up there?
Oh, it was surreal. Beautiful day on the coast, just getting ready for another day here with our guests.
I know, but what I want to know is what happened when the tsunami showed up.
Surreal moment, wasn't it? I took a phone call about the same time you did, maybe a little bit earlier. I was fast asleep. I was pretty sick, and sleeping things off a little bit, and I got a call from my night auditor asking me. He was very calm, just said, well, our guests want to know what we're going to do about the tsunami. And at that moment, I just had to kind of take a breath. And I looked down at my phone at that point, and I had, in fact, received a text from NOAA showing a earthquake in Japan. And looking at the numbers, and they seemed kind of large. They were up in the sevens for the first earthquake, and that's not very normal. So at that point, I went out into the living room and turned on the TV and saw the news reports and many of the same things that everybody at that point was watching.
Right, but it's hard for people to kind of fathom, if you'll excuse that pun in a way, the speed at which that wave travels. When you have an earthquake in Japan, next thing you know, the big island of Hawaii gets hit. And then, you know, the northwest in the United States. I mean, we had a situation in Santa Cruz, and then, of course, up near you.
Well, we kind of have Hawaii as a test, if you will, to know if there's going to be any major event. But at that point, the news was kind of, it was an advisory. And then very soon, NOAA came back with a warning. And that's when we knew things were getting a little bit more serious. So that's when I got dressed and came back down to the resort at about 2 in the morning.
So tell me what happened. I mean, it's difficult for people to comprehend that a resort on the coast of Oregon would have a tsunami preparedness.
Well, Cannon Beach is very unique. This community is incredible. There is a citizen organization, emergency prep committees, the fire chief, Cleve, the police chief. Everybody takes safety here very seriously. Cannon Beach has been on the leading edge of preparedness, both with our alarm system. We have some cache of supplies up in the hills. We've got great evacuation routes and signage. This community is on top of it.
And yet, what people don't realize is that perhaps the most dangerous fault line in the United States stretches from the northern part of California right through your backyard. It's called the Cascadia Fault Line, and for a long time nobody knew it was there. Well, we know it's there now, don't we?
Yeah, the Cascadia subduction zone and that style of earthquake and that event is a completely different situation than what occurred from Japan. From Japan, we had an 8-hour warning, essentially.
Sure. Well, you know, it's interesting, though, Chad, that you're able to handle it and that the community is together in this. More people need to know about this. This was definitely a wake-up call for us and unfortunately, of course, more than a wake-up call for the people in Japan. I just wanted to get you on the show to let people know that you do have to have an awareness of this and that when something happens, it's time to act.
We have a fantastic community here. Our guests were wonderful throughout that whole situation, as well as the fire department. We evacuated, came back.
We appreciate it, Chad. We got to go for a break now. But once again, Chad Sweet from the Cannon Beach Volunteer Fire Department. Keep up the good work, buddy. We'll be right back.
Phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Breeza Super Clubs Resort in the Bahamas. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, that's okay. You can always email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we'll solve it right here on the air. Speaking of our website, I encourage you to go to it for two reasons. One, it's called petergreenberg.com. What an amazing, imaginative name that is. For a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that great hard work in Japan, not to mention Haiti as well. It's a free newsletter. It's updated daily, delivered straight to your email inbox. So cost you nothing. We're not a transactional website. We're informational all the way. And bottom line is, when you do that, we get your emails as well, and we can solve them. For example, we've got one from Jordan in Lancaster, PA. I love all your advice online and the CBS Early Show. We need your help. I'm looking for an all-inclusive resort for our honeymoon in September. Travel agents are making Sandals resorts look so good, but are they really that great? The resort we are leaning towards is the Sandals Grand Antigua and staying in the luxury beachfront Sunset with butler service. With airfare, it costs us under $8,000. Well, that's kind of expensive. I guess I can't just get over the fact that I can spend $8,000 for a Sandals resort. Well, okay, I'm reading you here. We are looking for an all-inclusive resort, beautiful beaches and good food. I don't want to see that I am in a hotel and really want that wow factor. Am I going to get it with Sandals? Well, the answer is it all depends on which Sandals. And the one I would recommend is not far from where we are right now. They took over the old Four Seasons Hotel in Exuma. And it's a really great resort. You might want to check out the one right here in the Bahamas, the former Four Seasons, which is now a Sandals. And I'd say this to everybody who books an all-inclusive, watch out for the asterisks. Make sure that it really is all-inclusive. The one thing I noticed about Breezes here, and you got to give them credit, it really is all-inclusive. I mean, a lot of these places will say it's all-inclusive. Oh, yeah, but your water sports are extra, or this is extra, or this is extra. Here, even water skiing's included. How about that? I think the only thing that's not included is jet skis because they don't own them. But water skiing's included, all the water sports. That is a pretty cool thing, and that truly is all-inclusive. And do the same exact questioning with the Sandals folks, but I will tell you they've done a really good job in redoing the former Four Seasons Resort in Exuma and turning it into a Sandals, and that's probably their biggest luxury resort right here in the Bahamas. Here's one from Sam in Seattle. I'm aware of the website SeatGuru.com, which identifies good seats and bad seats on specific aircraft for specific air carriers. I'm wondering if there's a comparable website that identifies good and bad cabins on specific cruise ships. And the answer is, yes, there is. Or I should say, yes, there are. One, of course, is CruiseCritic.com. We've had Carolyn Spencer Brown on this show many, many times, who's the editor-in-chief of that. Really good resource on that, and great feedback from other members of that website as to which are good and which are bad. And once again, it gets down, as you know, we talked about all-inclusive, about definition of terms. Same thing applies here. Definition of terms about the cabin type. Every cruise line today tells you they got balconies. Well, how do you define a balcony? That you can open your door, but you can't even step out because it's so narrow? I mean, the real key about good and bad cabins is not whether or not it has a balcony. And it's not whether it is, you know, whether it's high up on the ship or not, or whether it has a view. The real key is, how much time are you spending in your cabin, other than showering and sleeping? Forget the brochures that are shot with every wide-angle lens known to man that make you think that you're going to be entertaining the entire state of Rhode Island in your cabin. You are not. You're there to shower and sleep. And the higher up on the ship you go, think about this, physics majors, the worse the center of gravity is, which means you'll be whipping around not only with roll but with pitch, especially in rough seas. You've got an inside center, middle cabin. No, you won't have a view, but you're only there to shower and sleep anyway. And guess what? You're not going to be tossing and turning in rough sea. And when you want to leave your cabin, you get to enjoy everything that everybody else on the ship is enjoying. By the way, the other website, of course, is TripAdvisor.com. Great feedback on cabin selection. But go to CruiseCritic.com for that, Sam. But remember what I said. A lot of cruise ships, the balconies are, as far as I'm concerned, way overrated. Way overrated. And here's one from another cruise ship question from Helena in Dallas, Texas. We are looking at some cruises where the internet price and the price from a travel agent are the same. Knowing the travel agent is getting commission, is there a way to get that saving when booking yourself on the cruise line's website? No, there's not. But if you have the same price by both the website and the travel agent, then you have bargaining power with the travel agent to get you what we would call value-added deals. Can you get a cabin upgrade? Can you get some dining options, especially when everything else on the ship other than the dining room costs money? This is your time to negotiate with a travel agent and remind them that the same price is on the website that they're giving you, so what are they actually giving you? In many cases, travel agents, and this is why booking a cruise ship with a travel agent is a good idea, have what they call a preferred supplier relationship with specific cruise lines where they can get you better dining hours or better dining locations or maybe shipboard credits that you can use against shore excursions or the spa, et cetera, et cetera. So my advice is you're not going to be able to get a discount because you went online instead of going to the travel agent. Look at it as another opportunity to do a value-added deal. And in many cases, the savings there are substantially greater than you'd already get than just a discount. Same thing applies to hotels about free parking or can your kids stay free or can your kids eat free. If it's not offered, that doesn't mean you shouldn't ask for it. And the same thing applies there. So, Helena, talk to your travel agent. Let them know you've already checked out the price on the website. It's exactly equal. So what can they throw in as a value added that's going to make the difference for you, okay? That music means you're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your last March weekend. But for those stations sticking around, we've got a whole lot more coming from Super Clubs at Breezes in Nassau in the Bahamas. Peter Greenberg Worldwide with yours truly. My name would be, of course, Peter Greenberg. We'll be back right after these messages.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide for this last weekend in March. Hope you're having a wonderful time wherever you happen to be. Of course, as you know, we live, breathe airline air and have been traveling, crisscrossing the world. In the last, in the last 10 days, it's been Dublin and London and Salzburg and Amsterdam and Cabo San Lucas, San Diego, New York, and then a few other places in between. Now get out your maps, boys and girls. 25 degrees, 5 minutes north, 77 degrees, 21 minutes west. We are coming to you from the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, otherwise known as Nassau, otherwise known as the Island of New Providence, otherwise known as Super Clubs Breezes on the island of Nassau. And taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. So much stuff in the news. I want to recommend our website for one important reason. Go to petergreenberg.com because we've got a comprehensive list there of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that essential hard work in Japan and still doing that essential hard work in places like Haiti, places where you can literally get involved. And while the infrastructure isn't ready for you yet in Japan, it will be in the next 3 weeks for you to actually go and do that volunteer vacation on the ground, whether you're a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, an engineer, a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, whatever, you have something to bring to the party and they need you. In the next 3 to 4 weeks, that will open up and you can actually plan your entire summer vacation around doing something good for others, which will come back to you exponentially and so much good for you as well. So please check out our website for that list. You can always donate money by texting on your phone, but this is above and beyond that in ways that you can really make a difference. So please check out our website. Lots of stuff in the news that we're going to talk about throughout the show. Of course, the controller falling asleep at the tower in Washington, D.C. Really stupid stuff about that, because the FAA has known about this kind of potential problem for a long time. We had a fatal accident in Lexington, Kentucky a couple of years ago because of that. They should have gotten their act together, and they didn't. And, of course, we're dealing with the resulting problems from that fuel fire at the Miami airport and how many flights have been canceled, just basically shutting down that airport for so many people. Because if you can't fuel the planes, you can't fly the planes. Let's go right to the phones first, because a couple of weeks ago, when we had all the uprising problems in Egypt, you heard my philosophy then. It's still my philosophy now that the best time to go to a location is after a problem like that. So many of my friends canceled their trips, and I told them they were stupid. I had to use an industrial-strength spatsuit to drive some of them to the airport to put them on planes. The same thing applied to Thailand last year and to many other locations. One of our listeners, his name is Walter. He's on the phone right now from Egypt. Hey, Walter.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
You tell me. I told you to go, and you went.
Oh, man. It's the best piece of advice you could have given to anybody. I grabbed my family, and we got on a plane, and we went, man.
All right. So tell me what happened.
Well, basically, we got on a plane, and we got to Cairo, and it's been spectacular. We visited Sharm el-Sheikh, we've visited Luxor, and now we're at the Paramisa Isis Island Resort in Aswan, Egypt. It's been unbelievable. I never in a million years dreamed that I would go to the pyramids and stand there by myself.
And you know what? What you just said to me was interesting, because I got a call from a couple of friends of mine. I mentioned using that industrial strength spatula to drive them out there. I told them, do not cancel your trip. You go. 3 days later, they called me on the phone and they said, we're just having the time of our lives. I said, where are you? They said, we're in Giza. So I said, oh, you're at the pyramids? They said, no, we are the pyramids. We're the only ones out here. We're having the best time of our lives. People are happy to see us. And we're seeing a country the way it was meant to be seen, without tour buses and long lines of people. Has that been more like your experience as well?
Peter, we went to the Red Pyramid at Darfur, and we were the only ones there. We stood inside the pyramid, went down into the chamber with not a single other tourist around.
And I bet that made you feel pretty special.
Oh, Peter, I mean, I have felt so spectacular. And speaking about feeling spectacular, you told me the Egyptian people were warm and welcoming. We have found that to be so, so true. They are truly special people. And on top of that, they love Americans.
You know, what you just said is so different than most people feel, because there's a difference between the way foreigners think about Americans and the way foreigners think about the American government. During the last administration, especially after we went into Iraq in 2003, everywhere I went around the world, people were not anti-American. They just wanted me to explain the actions of my government. There's a big difference there. And we have an opportunity here to build so many bridges of peace and understanding just by getting off our you-know-whats and going somewhere and continuing that conversation, which is what you're doing right now.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because Egypt just underwent its revolution. And I think as Americans, we need to support them by coming here and spending our tourist dollars, because we need to provide them with jobs. We need to put food on their table. And if we do that, it's less likely that they'll turn to some government that might not be as friendly to Americans.
Yeah, I agree. Now, honestly now, Walter, tell me the truth. How many of your friends thought you were nuts?
Every one of them. Every one of them. Up to the day we were leaving, my mother-in-law called my wife and said, "Would you like to leave your daughter with us?" My daughter spent her 13th birthday in Luxor, and it was spectacular. Everybody thought we were crazy, but it's been wonderful.
Yeah, talk about an extra credit assignment from school, right?
Oh, it's been phenomenal. You know, and the most important thing that I want people to hear is that the entire time we have never felt unsafe at all. It's just been, and if people thought, the Egyptian people thought we shouldn't go somewhere, they told us. Like when we got to Cairo, they said, just don't go to Tahrir Square. And we didn't on the days that it was busy or something going on, and we never knew anything was going on, because Cairo is a huge city. It's like if something was going on in Times Square, all you do is avoid Times Square.
Exactly. And that's the exact same philosophy I had with people in Thailand during the protest there last year. Yes, they had a fire. Yes, the building was burned down, but it was confined to a 4-block square area. I know this because I also live in Bangkok, and I was telling all my friends, just go. You're not going to have a problem. And just like Egypt, they went and they had a great time. Now, obviously, there are exceptions to that rule, and that would be if you're going to a location where no one's in control, like Somalia or parts of the Congo. But Egypt doesn't qualify for that, and neither does Thailand. And Walter, you get big kudos from me. You got a big shout out for listening to me and actually being bold enough to call me on the phone and tell me in front of all my audience that I actually was right.
Hey, can I tell you something more?
Yeah.
I have heard this is a phenomenal time for deals. I've heard from other travelers, some couple that I met just the other day, they said they spent $1,000 round trip to Cairo from L.A.
That's not a bad deal. Walter, enjoy the rest of your stay there in Aswan and throughout Egypt. We really appreciate the call, and I'm glad you did. When we come back, more from the Breezes. That's the super clubs in the Bahamas. No territorial problems here. We'll be back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 18 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here with you, coming to you from the Super Clubs at Breezes in the Bahamas, actually on Cable Beach in Nassau, taking your phone calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. It was really nice to get Walter's call from Aswan, because every once in a while, and don't we all like this, you get to be vindicated when you tell people to go somewhere and you're right. But I wasn't gambling when I told Walter to go. I was speaking from personal experience. I travel 400,000 miles a year, and I go to Cairo and to Egypt at least three times a year as it is. So I'm really glad he went. Speaking of vindication, did you see the piece in USA Today this week on Cancun and all of your other fears about going south of the border to Mexico? You already know how I feel about that. You know, it's called Get a Map. It's, you know, nobody's vacationing in Nuevo Laredo or Ciudad Juarez. In fact, I take that back. I think the only people vacationing in those two cities are American drug dealers. So, bottom line is, if you get a map, you'll realize that the distance between Tijuana and Cancun is virtually the same as the distance between Los Angeles and New York. That's how big Mexico is. So when the Texas Department of Public Safety, now there's an oxymoron, when the Texas Department of Public Safety says, don't go to Mexico, you'll be killed, it certainly gets my attention. Because I've just spent over a month in Mexico doing a television special there, which will be airing this coming September. We'll give you more information as we get closer to that date. But the bottom line is, just like Walter in Egypt, Peter in Mexico felt unsafe never. And the total number of Americans killed in the last 4 years versus the total number of Mexicans killed in the last 4 years, it's not even close. 34,000 Mexicans killed in this cartel versus cartel war, which is terrible, and it's just disgusting. Less than 20 Americans killed. And of those Americans killed, 18 were drug-related. I'd be worse off in Camden, New Jersey. Wake up, folks, and get down there. Now, having said all that, and dumping on the Texas Department of Public Safety, what a perfect segue to go to my next guest, who I still hope is talking to me. He's a reporter for the Dallas Morning News and a regular on our show, our good pal Terry Maxson. Hey, Terry.
How are you doing, Peter?
All right, you still talk to me?
Oh, yeah, certainly. There was a lot of questions, I think, about the advice from the Department of Public Safety, but of course, they're more oriented to the roads and where you... We have seen much of the violence has been right on the border cities. So I don't know if they're speaking of Cancun. I don't know if I drive to Cancun from Dallas.
Well, I don't know anybody who drives to Cancun from Dallas.
So we'll give them that. Don't drive it. Don't drive your 2011 Blazer from Dallas.
That's great advice, Terry. Okay, thanks for calling. No, let's move on.
Okay.
Hey, listen, lots of stuff in the news today, of course. The fallout, literally, and I hate to say literally, but it's true, from the Japan earthquake and the tsunami. Airlines basically sometimes avoiding Japan entirely, sometimes overflying it. But most of the airlines that I know right now are going to try to resume their service.
Yes, and you know, my airline in this area, American Airlines, has never cut back its service. Of course, it is much smaller in that regard than the two larger U.S. airlines that serve Japan. American, only like 5% of their capacity is devoted to the Pacific, where Delta is 13%, and United Airlines and Continental Airlines combined are over 17%. So it's a much smaller issue, but it is a question for them. I expect a decision sometime this week about whether or not they'll reduce their flights.
But the bottom line is, if you're a business traveler, we'll get to leisure traveler in a second, but if you're a business traveler doing business in Japan, especially in the southern part of the country, I would see no reason not to go. And the smart business travelers that I know are doing just that.
Here's the problem. Right now, what are we, about 3 weeks from, more like 2 weeks from the disaster. There's so much uncertainty about it, because if the nuclear reactor issue is brought under control, then the concerns are late. But it's the uncertainty more than the certainty of what's happened, I think, that is making some people worried. I saw a report on Friday from Deutsche Bank analyst Michael Lindberg, who's saying there's a 60% drop in foreigners arriving in Tokyo Narita between March 11th and, I think, March 22nd. But a 12% increase in foreigners departing Japan. And then offsetting that was there's fewer Japanese departing Tokyo. Don't know if there's more coming in. So in that mix, you know, everybody who's panicking has to get out before they can really know what a steady state level of traffic is and determine what they're going to do.
Sure, and the ripple effect, of course, is already being felt in places like Hawaii, in Hong Kong, in Korea. All three of those locations are the recipients of a tremendous amount of Japanese outbound tourism. So, we've seen this happen once before in Hawaii, where they were so dependent on the Japanese market, and then when the Japanese economy shrunk, all these Hawaiian tour operators and all these Hawaiian hotels were sitting there going, uh-oh. Well, they're sitting there going, uh-oh, right now.
I don't think a lot of Americans realize what you said, which is that there are probably more Japanese vacationers than there are from the mainland of the United States. And more importantly, the Japanese passengers or visitors will spend a measurably amount more than the average U.S. passenger. I saw figures fairly recently that the average Japanese visitor would spend nearly $250 a day on average, and the average U.S., let's say, West, if I remember from the western part of the United States, would spend like $170 a day. A much bigger difference. So,
oh, sure. In fact, there's even a bigger number than that, Terry. The last figure I saw is the average Japanese tourist in Hawaii per trip spends about $4,000.
So the general belief is that the biggest impact for the foreseeable future, and let's say that's next several months, is going to be on the leisure traffic.
Because
a lot of the people, there are the economic concerns, there is the concerns about family, there's a whole bunch of people, I presume, who will say, this isn't the time to go on vacation to Hawaii. And the general belief is that leisure traffic is going to take the bigger hit for the foreseeable future than the international trip. Now, in an investment conference sponsored by J.P. Morgan this past week, Ed Bastian, the president of Delta, said what they're expecting is, you know, a big short-term effect, and they're cutting back their capacity 15 to 20% through May. But they expect that there will be a upturn going into the end of the year. When that upturn happens, I don't know, but they expect there will be a lot of investment for the recovery, a lot of things to stimulate the economy, and that the turnaround will come. They just don't know when, and that's the situation all U.S. airlines in, although there's a fairly small number of airlines providing passenger service.
Right, and the interesting thing, Terry, right now is that if you're a smart business traveler, now's the time to go to Japan, and if you're a smart leisure traveler, now's the time to go to Hawaii, because you're going to see a lot of discounting on all the islands in Hawaii to make up that shortfall from the lack of Japanese inbound tourism.
Well, you know, after 9/11 and after the big drop-off in traffic toward the end of 2008 and into 2009, you saw some great bargains transatlantic, some great bargains. We haven't seen those yet to Tokyo, and I believe it's just because it's just too early, because before you can offer those kind of bargains, you've got to decide what your strategy is. And in talking to American and listening to Delta and Continental, United Continental, they're just trying to look at the situation and see which way to go forward.
Exactly, but I'll make you this prediction. You probably will. Well, I won't say you probably will. I hope you'll agree with me. Within 3 weeks, you're going to see $700 airfares from New York to Tokyo, and $500 airfares from Los Angeles to Tokyo, and then you're going to see a lot of bundled packages to Hawaii from anywhere in the United States, which will basically give you the airfare, the hotel, and even a rental car.
Yes, and you know, it's interesting that it's right at this point in time that both United and American Airlines are trying to launch LAX Shanghai flights, and there are some fairly good fares between those two cities, as both those airlines are competing on price and frequent flyer awards and things like that. And,
exactly.
They're just, you know, this is not when you need these distractions.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a good time for the airlines, but it is a buyer's market for all of us, even though it's coming from a bad, bad situation in Japan. Terry Maxson from the Dallas Morning News, thanks for joining us. And when we come back, more from the Super Club's breezes in the Bahamas. Back right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you on this last weekend in March, coming to you from the Super Club's breezes in Nassau, the Bahamas. And for those people who are geographically challenged, let me share with you, we're talking nearly 700 islands. That stretch miles and miles and miles. It's not just Nassau. There's so many other islands. And joining me now, somebody knows a little bit about that, who's had a lot of influence on some of those islands with his artwork. He's a Bahamian sculpture artist, but we just know him as Antonius Roberts. Hey, man.
Hey, Peter. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Now, I know we're here in Nassau today. We're coming from the Breezes Resort, but your studio is not far from here, but you like to get out of Nassau, don't you?
Oh, it's, you know, we have beautiful islands.
I mean, when you think about it, we're talking about, I mean, there's Eleuthera, there's Exuma, there's Abaco, there's Bimini, Spanish Wells, Walker's Key, Rugged Island. I can keep going here, my God.
There's also Cat Island as well.
How about Crooked Island?
Long Island.
Ooh. Yeah, not the Long Island that I know, the Long Island that you know.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but you're a big fan of Eleuthera, aren't you?
I'm a big fan of Eleuthera. In fact, I just was in Eleuthera 2 days ago for the opening of a plant reserve, the Leon Levy Plant Reserve. It's a beautiful 25-acre of where people can just come and experience indigenous plants of the Bahamas, and particularly, which you like, talk about bush medicine.
Wow.
And so that, for me, that was an inspiration.
Yeah, bush medicine out here means you can treat anything with aloe.
You can treat anything with and Sarah C.
And what now?
Sarah C.
Explain.
Sarah C. is a bush that grows wild. It's like a vine. You pick it, you boil it, you got a cold, you got flu, it'll knock it right out of your brother. But you got to add some lime to it as well.
Yeah. Oh, it's always the lime.
Always the lime.
So basically, you're treating yourself with a Corona beer. With a little,
you can get a little high.
Now, you work mostly with a lot of unclaimed wood.
Unclaimed wood, unclaimed stone. I mean, for me...
Where do you find the unclaimed wood?
Well, Peter, right now, if you look out of this window, you'll see the development going on. Bahama, they're expanding and they're doing a wonderful resort. And
there's a lot of wood there.
And there's a lot of wood. I mean, you know, people have to clear land for whatever reason. And for me, you know, I like to say, well, let's not just eradicate. Let's transform. So I'm interested in transformation. So you pick up a piece of that wood, piece of that stone, and just put it back into the environment.
Now, I grew up on an island in New York where I still live, on Fire Island in New York, and it was a big shipping lane area in front of us on the ocean, and there wasn't a time, even including today, that we didn't pick up beautiful pieces of driftwood on the beach.
Incredible. I mean, right about half a mile from here, Saunders Beach, if you get a chance to just drive going east, you will see some beautiful benches that's lining the shoreline. Now, those benches were made from casuarina trees that once lined, the shoreline.
And who made those benches?
Well, I played a small role in making those benches. But reality, for me, we talk about places I love to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm privileged to be a part of a wonderful development that's going on in Abaco, South Abaco, Schooner Bay. And, you know, it's a developer who actually don't want to cut down all the trees. I mean, he's actually just creating beautiful dwellings in and among the coppers. And I have a studio there, and that's where I love to spend a lot of my time, on the island of Abaco.
For people listening to the show who've never been to the Bahamas or who've never been outside of Nassau, I mean, there's people who come to Atlantis or they come to Breezes, they'll never leave the resort.
That's really unfortunate because actually the beauty of the Bahamas can be experienced on the ocean, on the water. And you get on a fast ferry, you can be in Eleuthera in about 3 hours. You can go and, you know.
Or you can fly over.
Oh, you can fly. Well,
the
there you go.
Plane. The seaplanes, come on.
It just depends on your resources. You can be anywhere at any time, whenever you want, in the Bahamas.
What's the biggest surprise for people who've never been here before for the first time that they're not expecting to see, that they go, whoa, I had no idea?
How beautiful our waters are. Particularly if they have an opportunity to go to Exuma. I think Exuma has some of the most beautiful waters in the world. The waters are beautiful. They're crystal clear, wonderful white sandy beaches. I think that's what makes almost everybody go, wow.
and the government getting a little bit more on their act together in terms of protecting them?
I would hope so. I mean, you know,
we always
think governments can do more.
Well, we know that.
All right, but governments cannot do it alone. You know, Peter, we as a people got to take pride in our environment and try to preserve as much of it as we possibly can.
But you hesitated when I asked you about the government. You think they should do more?
You don't speak about we don't talk politics here. We talk about beautiful environment.
No. That's another travel show. We name names here. Are you telling me the government needs to do more? Come on, you can say it.
I think all governments everywhere could do more.
And in particular in the Bahamas?
Particularly in the Bahamas.
Thank you very much.
Particularly
okay.
In the Bahamas.
All right. What should they be doing then?
Well, actually, they should actually be motivating, inspiring, putting some resources, putting some incentives there, or, in fact, increasing the penalties for littering. We need to really say to our people and to those who come into the country, particularly the boaters, listen, you come into our shores, you know, you're privileged to be here on our harbors.
No dumping. I gotcha.
And that's
unless they want to dump some wood overboard, which of course then you will reclaim and turn into benches.
Well, you know, I pick up the plastic that they dump anyway,
bad.
In the can. I mean,
and that's
just
not art.
So
that's just garbage.
It is garbage.
All right, Antonius Roberts, I'm coming to see you later today. I want to go check out those benches. I want to check out the reclaimed wood. Deal?
Yeah, that's a deal, my brother.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You got it. We'll be back with more from the Breezes Super Club here in Nassau in the Bahamas. And later on, we'll sneak out to Exuma and check out the beach. Back with more right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Bahamas at the Breezes Resort here in Nassau, actually on Cable Beach, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER, and if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. My next guest, catch this story. December 25th, Christmas Day, 1999, he decides to leave the United States for a three-month post-graduation trip to Southeast Asia. He's been traveling ever since. And, of course, he's known as the permanent nomad. His email, wanderingearl.com. Derek Earl Barron, where are you today, Derek?
I'm actually in just outside of Cancun, Mexico, at the moment.
Ah, you know, we've been talking on the radio for the last couple of weeks. I keep telling everybody Mexico is safe, that people should not be motivated by their fears. How are things in Cancun today?
That's the amazing thing. It's really as safe as could be. It's peaceful, quiet, safe, and in one of the neighborhoods I used to live in, people don't even lock their doors, and it really is. There's not a worry at all, and I think that's something that surprises a lot of people, but it's the reality in the end.
Well, you know, it gets down to a story it gets down to what, daring to go someplace where your own government says not to go. You know, there are so many warnings or advisors that the United States State Department issues. You know, an American tears a fingernail in Peru and they issue an advisory. You've been to northern Iraq. I've been there too. Erbil is peaceful and quiet, right?
Yep. Absolutely. I tell people that you can't even imagine how safe you feel when you're walking around the streets of Erbil. And people just wouldn't believe it anyway. But
I'm talking to you right now in Mexico, but you've been to Lebanon. I have too. My last name is Greenberg. I'm still alive. What a concept. It was funny. A couple of years ago, I took about 20 of my friends for New Year's Eve, and we went to Jordan, we went to Israel, we went to Lebanon, and I never saw people freak out more than when I told them we were going to Lebanon. And the funniest thing happened is 2 days after we got there, all my nervous friends came to me and said, "Can we extend our trip? We're having too much fun."
that's no surprise. When I just went recently, it was actually, I left about 3 days after the U.S. government increased their travel warning, recommending that all U.S. citizens leave Lebanon. And I arrived thinking, okay, this will be interesting. And I first, you can't even imagine how many Americans were actually there in Beirut. And again, it was perfectly safe, and I stayed for as long as I possibly could myself.
I mean, okay, then I have to ask the devil's advocate question right now, Earl. Is there a place you wouldn't go?
Well, you know, I would have said originally Afghanistan, but I did go there and found it to be pretty similar as well. I think that's not for everybody, but I actually would have said Somalia. That's the one place that I have always said. However, I recently met three travelers that just traveled through Somalia, and again, I mean, I know they were very experienced travelers, but they again had similar experiences that I've had in other semi-dangerous places, and they loved it and said people were super friendly, and they didn't run into a single problem at all. So I'm not sure there is a place at the moment.
Well, there probably is. I mean, my judgment criteria is I won't go anywhere where no one's in control. So Somalia still is on my list. Parts of the Congo, yep. Parts of Chechnya, perhaps. But now I've run out. I mean, there are 196 countries in the world, and I just named three, and I'm out. That's it.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's not many at all. Yet, if you look at the list, there's obviously quite a few more than three on the list of any country.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, because of all the travel warnings. But when you start putting things in perspective, the murder rate in Washington, D.C. far overshadows the murder rate in Mexico. I mean, we can go down the list where people want to stay home because they think it's safer, when in fact it's not.
Right, and that's the thing. You know, a lot of the wording with a lot of the travel warnings says, you know, American citizens have been, you know, the targets of violence in the past, which is pretty vague, and sometimes that's based on one or two incidents, which, of course, if you look at home and you open up, this is what I tell to a lot of family and friends who say, why are you going to Lebanon? Why are you going to Mexico? You know, sadly, open up the newspaper in any town in the U.S., and there's a heck of a lot more violence to be worried about, you know, random violence than occurs in most of these other places.
And when's your next trip, and where's your next trip?
I'm hoping, actually, my next trip to be East Africa, so I'm hoping to go down from Egypt down and test out Somalia a little bit, and Sudan, and sort of...
Well, you know what, Earl? Check in with us. Keep in touch. We really appreciate it. Of course, Earl Barron, the permanent nomad. Of course, his email is actually his website, wanderingearl.com. We really appreciate it, man. Back with more from the Bahamas right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here coming to you from the Bahamas and specifically the Breezes Super Clubs Resort right here in Nassau, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. I am a huge fan of getting out of a hotel or a resort and getting to know the locals down and dirty, up close and personal. And one of the best ways to do it is when you talk to people, when you have a conversation, whether it's the maid in your hotel room or the guy who's driving the bus or in my next case, the legendary guy who's driving the cab. And his name, you got to love this name. I'm going to give you the full name. Leviticus Romeo Farrington. Did I get it right?
You got it.
I got it. And you've been driving a cab how long?
For about 42 years.
But who's counting?
But who's counting?
And what's amazing is once you get into the cab, if people are bold enough to say, hey, Romeo, take me someplace where you want to go, as opposed to what I thought I saw in the brochure, then that opens you up to a world of possibilities.
Oh, yes. It sure does.
So I remember in Bermuda, there's a cab driver there. I can tell you his name to this day, Vince Cann. Even though he's retired, I still hang with him when I go there because this guy takes me everywhere. But I mean, places I would never otherwise know about.
Exactly.
Right? In New York City, there was a cab driver for years, an Egyptian man named William Magala, who I used to call him on his cell phone. He'd come by in his yellow cab and get me because he was the coolest guy ever. Okay. So now you are my version of that man right here in the Bahamas. So what I need to know now, Romeo, is for people listening to the show who are coming to Nassau or anywhere in the Bahamas for the first time, but particularly Nassau because that's where we are, where do you like to hang out? Where do you want to? Where would you take me that I wouldn't know about otherwise?
Well, first of all, I would take you to places that I enjoy. My thing is to try and make two-thirds native of you. Therefore, I will take you away from your hotel room.
Thank you. I'm all in favor of that.
And I will take you in our area over the hill. I will take you to where I would go to eat.
Like?
I would take
Where do you want to go eat?
Fish fries.
All right.
Fish fry, where there's many, many small restaurants.
Give me a name.
Goldie's, Twin Brothers, to name a couple of them. But there's Little Andros, one called Little Andros. And these are all places that visitors find by accident take them there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not in the brochure. You just got to go hang at these places.
You just hang there, and you could play domino and checkers with the guys after your meal.
So you can lose some money.
Oh, yeah.
Can lose some money.
They don't play for money. They just play for the fun of it.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They don't play for money. There's places, though.
Oh, I'm sure there are. Yes. But at the fish fry places, you're playing checkers or dominoes. You're having some great fish.
Yeah.
And maybe a beer or two.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course, Kalek.
That's the local beer.
That's the local beer.
Yeah.
It's taken the world.
What about music?
Music, yes. There is local places that we would take you for entertainment. Like, there's a couple of places on Bay Street that plays the merengue, the calypsos, and so on, you know. And that would be the place that we would encourage you to go. And you can see a local floor show as well.
But it's totally local.
It's totally local, yes.
As opposed to going to a resort where they're bringing in the entertainment.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Cool.
We try to keep you in the local atmosphere. We want you to see the Bahamas and the Bahamian people.
All right, so we're doing local beer, plantain, fish fry, mm-hmm. a little conch here and there.
Right.
Right?
Oh, yeah, conch. Yeah.
You got to do the conch.
Can't leave that out.
Now, are we talking conch fritters?
You're talking about conch salad.
Ah, tell me about that.
Yeah, the conch salad, they take the conch live from the shell, and this is all being done in front of you. Because the places that we would take you for the conch, they have the conch right in the water. It's on the water, a little booth on the water. And they just reach down in the water, pick up the conch, chop it out of the shell, take out the conch, and the conch is jumping when they're making the conch salad for you.
So it's basically a jumping conch salad.
Oh, yeah, it's a jumping conch salad. And then you can have it spicy. If you like spice, you can. They tune it to where you want it. But it's, in my opinion, the best conch salad because then you're eating it freshly made.
Yeah, and then you're jumping the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Depending on how much they tune it up.
That's right, yeah. Well, they will do that on your advice.
What's the biggest surprise for people who have never been here before that you're going to show them? The biggest surprise?
The biggest surprise, I would say, for somebody who has never been here before would be our points of interest.
Like
the Queen Staircase,
yeah,
the Water Tower, the fort, and giving the history of it. Generally,
and people don't realize how far back that really goes.
Right.
Amazing.
Right. For example, the slavery was abolished in 1838.
Do you know what? I'm coming back. I'm going to ride with you. I'm going to come back and ride with you. Romeo Farrington, legendary taxi driver. If you look in the movie Never Say Never Again, you'll see him because he was driving somebody, but I won't tell you who his name is. His initials were Sean Connery. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Back with more. That music means that we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around, a whole lot more coming from the Breezes Resort in Nassau in the Bahamas. Back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide on this last weekend in March. Hope you're having a wonderful time wherever you happen to be. We've been living on airplanes, duh. But had to do a little circuitous route to get down to where we are right now. Get out your masks, boys and girls. 25 degrees, 5 minutes north, 77 degrees, 21 minutes west. We're coming to you from the island of, well, we're coming to you from the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, more specifically Cable Beach and Nassau, more specifically the Super Clubs Resort known as Breezes, right here. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. I mentioned a circuitous route to get down here because there was a huge fire at the Miami airport earlier this week. Their fuel park area, all their fuel supplies basically literally up in flames, shutting down all the pumps, airlines canceling dozens and dozens of flights because if you can't fuel them, you can't fly them. So instead of going through Miami to get here, I came around through New York. And going home will be an interesting challenge because they still haven't fixed the problem and won't for at least a week and a half. So I'll let you know where we'll be on the air next week from a different location, assuming I get there. But first and foremost, we're having a great time here. And lots of stuff in the news beyond that fuel fire. Of course, the residual fallout, which is considerable and continuing in Japan following the earthquake and the tsunami. I encourage you to go to our website with the most imaginative name possible, petergreenberg.com, for one important reason. We have a comprehensive list there of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that essential hard work, not just in Japan, but, of course, the continuing work in Haiti, in western China, and Chile. All those places here, including New Zealand, which have suffered from natural disasters, the one in Japan and, of course, the one in Haiti being the two most devastating, where the rebuilding efforts will take years. And the most interesting part of all this, and I encourage you to look at it in this perspective, is that even though the infrastructure is not available yet for you to go there and help, it will. In the next 3 to 4 weeks, you will see from that list that we have all the different aid and relief organizations that will allow you then to become part of a volunteer vacation that you craft, whether you're a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, an engineer, a teacher, a lawyer, anybody can have something that they can bring to the party here over and above just texting $10 on your phone as a donation, which, by the way, I encourage you to do as well. But we're talking over 50 different organizations on the ground there doing great work where you can then get involved and craft your own, if you will, excuse the expression, volunteer vacation of anywhere from a week to a month, where what you get back is so much more than you give, and it's so amazing, and it's so essential. So please go to our website. It'll be a very good decision that you make. And when you do that, by the way, call me up. Let me know how it's going. Give us a report from the field. Earlier this month and earlier last month, as you know, with the uprisings and the revolution, if you will, in Egypt, so many of my friends wanted to cancel their trips, and I told them not to do so under any circumstances. That the first thing the Egyptians had to do, even before they announced the elections, would be to get their tourism infrastructure back because it was their primary source of foreign exchange and income. And the people who listen to me, and I say this again, I had to use an industrial strength spatula to get them on the plane, but the people who listen to me, we had Walter call up on the phone earlier in the show from Aswan saying it was the best decision he ever made with his wife and kids. They're having a great time in Egypt, that most of their friends thought they were nuts and crazy and out of their mind, and guess what? He wasn't. The rule of thumb, and I can't emphasize this enough, is as long as you know who's in control, you go. If it's Somalia, if it's parts of the Congo, if it's parts of Chechnya, I'll give you a pass on that one. There are 196 countries in the world. I just named three. I can't name any more. The other 193 I'd go to. Would I go to North Korea tomorrow? Yes, I know who's in control. Maybe one other one you might want to add to the list just temporarily would be Libya. Because up until recently, you knew who was in control. It was Gaddafi. And I'll make you this bet. You're not going to see another Iraq. You're not going to see another Iran when Gaddafi goes. How about that? When he goes, as opposed to if he goes. He will go. You're not going to see tribal warfare. You're going to see an international coalition come in and set up the structure for the makings of a true democracy. It may be a little rocky at first, but the gunfire will stop, and people will realize about how much Libya has to offer. For those people who've done their homework and have a map, some of the best ruins that have been undiscovered in the world you'll find in Libya along the coast. Amazing. And let's not forget that up until recently, a number of U.S. cruise lines had announced port stops in both Tripoli and Benghazi. In the wake of what's going on, they've already canceled them, which I think is a little short-sighted because they weren't supposed to even happen until November. Duh. Put them back on the schedule, guys, because by November, I'm going to tell you one thing right now. I'll be there. And so will everybody else who's smart. It's only March now. Why would you cancel a port call in November based on your fears now? How short-sighted is that? That's stupid. Well, then again, I'm not shy. It's stupid. It's what it is. Now, I'm a big fan of being, you know, informed and making rational decisions. But basically motivating by your fear is stupid. And I will come into your house and slap you every time I hear that. You're not being a traveler. You're being a nervous tourist. And I won't even want to talk to you. We talk to smart travelers on the phone here, and this is a show for smart travel. So, okay, the rest of you can, like, turn off your stations now. No, it's okay. I know who you are, and you know who you are. Just pack some common sense and intelligence, and you can go virtually anywhere. That's the point. Here's an email from Rhonda in Brooklyn, New York. I'll be traveling in Italy for about 10 days. I have a BlackBerry Curve from Verizon, which I know can't be used internationally. I don't want to switch to a Bold or something else at this point. Any suggestions where I can rent a cell phone? Yes. Believe it or not, Verizon has a program, and it's VZWSatellite.com, where they're in partnership with a number of cell hire firms around the world, where you can place an order for a rental pack that includes your charger, adapters, battery pack, voicemail service worldwide, global coverage, blah, 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 blah. The cool thing is all your incoming calls are free and your outgoing calls are charged at a flat rate per minute. That's a good deal, especially if you're not going to be making a lot of outgoing calls because you're having too much fun where you are anyway. So answer again for you, Rhonda. It's VZWSatellite.com, and that's where you get the information on how to rent one without having to go out and buy a whole new system just for a very short trip, because you're the one who told me it's going to be a short trip to begin with. Speaking of trips, coming up after the break, we got our good friend George Hobica, the founder of AirfareWatchdog.com, one of the best websites in the world when it comes to finding great airfare deals, when you consider the fact, and it is a fact, that airlines change their fares. They revise and update their fares 275,000 to 300,000 times a day. Want to hear that again? A day. So lots of stuff there. And one piece of advice I'll share with you now and when George joins us is this. Don't just sign up for all those airfare alerts based on where you want to go. Sign up for airfare alerts based on where you live. That may determine where you want to go based on the deal that you're going to find that you didn't even know existed. How about that for a tease coming up? When we come back from the Breezes Super Clubs Resort here in the Bahamas, Peter Greenberg here with Peter Greenberg Worldwide. When we come back, George Hobica with the good, the bad, and the ugly of where airfares are going and what you can do about it. Back with more right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 18 minutes after the hour, coming to you from a place that was established in 1647 by the group of English settlers, and then, of course, there were pirates, and there were more pirates, and there was Prohibition, then there were the English settlers back again. And if you look hard enough, you might find a few more pirates, too, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. Peter Greenberg, you're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we'll solve it right on the air. I've mentioned my website You should go onto it for two reasons. One, you can sign up for my free newsletter. It's updated every 12 hours, and it's totally free, delivered to your email inbox, I should say. And we're not a transactional site. We're informational. We're not trying to sell you anything. It's got the top travel news stories of the day, plus my tips to help you navigate the mess otherwise known as the travel process. So it's petergreenberg.com for that. And it's also petergreenberg.com for the list of aid and relief organizations doing all that essential hard work in Japan and in Haiti. So I just thought I'd mention that. Let's go right to some of the emails. But before we do that, one other thing. There'll be a show coming up in the next couple of weeks on board the new SS Antoinette, the super ship river cruise line that was just launched in Amsterdam. And the cool thing about this ship, and they're starting to get smarter in the cruise industry, it started with the Norwegian Epic, where they built 128 cabins just for solo travelers, because we all know how much people get ripped off by that dreaded single supplement on cruise ships. Guess what? Solo travelers, basically, they've waived the single supplement on the Uniworld folks on their ships for all of their, excuse me, for many of their 2011 Europe and Russia River cruise departures. That is a great deal. Finally, they're getting smart that there are a lot of single people out there who can vote with their wallets, and they're not going to get ripped off anymore with that dreaded single supplement. Okay, now let's go to the emails from Thelma in Ann Arbor, Michigan. My flight to my final destination was delayed from the beginning of the journey, and I missed my connecting flight, had to board another flight. Because of the delay and a later flight, we missed our connection. We discussed with both airlines, and both stated it is not our problem, and you'll have to get a hotel room on your own. Isn't it true that airlines are supposed to put you up at a hotel for the night and help with your connecting flights? Well, it's not true. Nobody's mandating them to do it. They will do it as a courtesy if you're doing it in a connecting city where they screwed up. The question is, who did the screw up, the initial flight or the connecting flight? Who wants to take responsibility, and where do you stand in the pecking order of their frequent flyer program? You know, if you're showing up there with a pair of Birkenstocks, a copy of the Lonely Planet guidebook, and a T-shirt, chances are they're not going to put you in a hotel. If you're well-dressed and you're a member of their frequent flyer program, there's a reasonably good chance they will save you, but it also depends on the airline itself. You know, some airlines will do it. Some airlines, like Spirit, I mean, yeah, you forget that. I don't even think Spirit's an airline. I mean, don't even get me started on Spirit. But bottom line is, there is no one rule. People think there are rules. There aren't any rules. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be given that hotel room when they screwed up like that and not be forced to spend the night sitting in either a hotel lobby or an airline terminal. But it all gets down ultimately to the conversation and your attitude with that gate agent and that counter agent. So be nice. Be assertive, but not aggressive. Be nice and appeal to their sense of fairness and the fact that they've been beaten up 85 other times that day before they ever saw your face. Meredith in Boulder, Colorado. My husband and I are currently on an around-the-world trip. Well, I'm already jealous, Meredith. We started in October in Hawaii and went west, enjoying every moment except that we appear to bring doom and gloom everywhere we go. Earthquakes in New Zealand, floods in Australia. We just had to leave Japan a little early due to the earthquake. All right, Meredith, you're doing your own personal disaster tour. My next question was regarding Egypt. We were supposed to be there in early May. News bulletin, Meredith, they already had their problem. It's okay. Okay? They beat you to it. You can go. You can float down the Nile, and you can head to Cairo. She said, we never really trust what the Department of State website says. Well, that makes two of us, Meredith. I mean, don't get me started on U.S. State Department advisories. They're called advisories for a reason. You can look at them and be advised. That doesn't mean you have to be guided or basically ordered to do anything. So here's the good news. They've already had the earthquake in Japan. They've already had the floods in Australia. They had the earthquake in New Zealand. You were there for all of it. Guess what? Everything will be fine in Egypt. You go. Okay? Would that be okay for you? It's okay with me. Let's go to a couple more emails. I mean, bottom line is, Meredith, basically, play the odds. You know? I mean, you're already batting 100, 200, 300. Not going to happen. You'll be fine. Here's one from Alice in Augusta, Maine. My son who lives in Dublin was recently diagnosed with leukemia. I'm sorry to hear that, Alice. If I were to book any flight, it would have to be changeable and refundable. As I'm nearly 66 years old and living on Social Security, my funds are limited. Otherwise, I'd have moved back to Dublin long ago. Do you know of any airline or booking service which might be of help? Well, the good news, if there's any good news, is Ireland is a discounted market right now. You have Aer Lingus flying there. Some flights from British Air, but the thing is this. You live in Augusta, Maine, so your nearest airport would be Boston, and there are some cheap flights going between Boston and Ireland. No one is going to sell you a discounted seat as a one-way ticket that far in advance. In many cases, Now, Alice, it's more appropriate for you financially to buy a round-trip ticket even if you don't use the return coupon. It'll be cheaper. That would be my advice. The other thing is, you heard about Meredith buying the round-the-world ticket. Well, you could do the same thing. You can buy a round-the-world ticket for about $1,800 that will allow you to go from Boston to Ireland and then continue heading east for the next year if you wanted to do that, with stopovers at your discretion. But if you just need to go between between the East Coast and Ireland, then my advice is to do one-way tickets through Aer Lingus, and that's probably the best way to go. Here's one from, and by the way, I hope your son gets better. Here's one from Loretta in San Francisco. I'm a meeting and events manager. A few years ago, I started a list serving for my colleagues, and we now have 3,500 listers who discuss topics relevant to our industry. And she's sharing a post for me. It has come to my attention there is a scam hotel management company that is out there that just hit one of my corporate groups and is calling my members offering $30 to $50 discounts on my room block at the same hotel. Here's the deal. No one should ever take a phone call or get an email from somebody offering you a discount at a hotel where you're already reserved, especially if it's a third party. That means somebody they've been phishing, and somebody got a copy of your email or phone number, and it's sort of like if somebody comes to your door at the hotel and you're not expecting them, look through the peephole, see if they're wearing a uniform from that hotel, and then ask who they are, and then call down the front desk and see if engineering really did need to send them up. And if you didn't order room service, why would you open the door when the guy says it's room service? What a joke. So the answer is, that's a scam. And anybody who's already pre-registered at a convention and then gets that discounted call from a third party, ignore it. From Sim in Miami, Florida. My wife and I travel a lot, mostly domestic travel to the Caribbean or the Caribbean. I get points on my credit card for travel, but I never use it because there's just too many rules and regulations. Yeah, tell me about it. I always use a different airline, and I always go to a different hotel because I've yet to find one that I'm even 80% satisfied with. You should be traveling with Meredith. And if I'm happy with them, they aren't flying where I'm going. Is there a frequent flyer type club that you can recommend for me that I can join to get the perks of being a frequent traveler? Well, you just got finished telling me, Sim, you don't fly any one airline. So why would you want to join a frequent flyer program to get points on an airline you don't fly on very often? Your email is a little contradictory. If you told me there's one airline that you like or one hotel group that you like, I can give you that answer. Keep in mind one other thing, that we live in the world of airline strategic alliances. So it's not one airline. It's the One World Alliance, which would be American and British and Qantas and Royal Jordanian and many others, and Iberia. Or it would be Star Alliance, which has the most number of members. It's United and Air New Zealand and SAS and Lufthansa. And, of course, there's the Sky Team, which is Delta and Air France and KLM. So you have to figure out which ones you're going to fly the most. And then you have some possibilities there. From Carolyn, Bend, Oregon. What is the tipping policy in Holland America? Where does one buy a prepaid phone that works in Israel, Italy, Egypt, and Greece? Well, we just answered that question before from one of our other listeners. Verizon's got them, AT&T has them, and, of course, any tourist organization offers it on the ground when you land. So you check with their tourist board in the U.S. before you leave. As far as tipping policy in Holland America, my understanding is it's a daily rate that you pay at the end of the cruise with an envelope. On some of their other ships, remember, Holland America is owned by Carnival. They have different policies, whether it's Seabourn or Carnival itself. In some cases, you can prepay it. In some cases, you can't. So bottom line is, since I'm sure you booked your cruise with a travel agent, find out what's the easiest way for you, whether it's prepaying it with your credit card so you don't have to always go to your wallet or carry extra cash either for the end of the cruise or doing it at the end of the cruise. I'm a big fan of doing it at the end of the cruise simply because what's the point of tipping ahead of time when you don't know what kind of service you're going to get? Remember what the concept of tipping is? The word tip, you know what it used to mean? To ensure promptness. So the only promptness they're asking you to do is to tip early. That doesn't work for me. All right, when we come back, more from the Breezes Resort Super Club in the Bahamas. Peter Greenberg here with Peter Greenberg Worldwide. We'll be back with more right after these messages.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here, coming to you from the Super Clubs at Breezes in Nassau and the Bahamas. And, of course, Super Clubs Breezes, known as an all-inclusive. But there is one thing it doesn't include. But, of course, it does include my next guest, who's going to tell you what it doesn't include. But it's all over the place. It's called Junkanoo. And my first experience with Junkanoo was I got to Nassau probably 20 years ago. I flew in for the day for a meeting, and I don't know what happened. I was walking down the street and turned the corner, and all of a sudden, there it was. My next guest knows a little bit about that. She's basically not only the co-founder and director of the Educulture Bahamas, but the Junkanoo Museum, and her name is Arlene Nash. Arlene, help me out now. I really couldn't do it justice. Describe Junkanoo.
It's difficult to describe, but it's one of those things that makes us uniquely Bahamian and very different. It's our national cultural festival. It's sight, it's sound, it's color, it's rhythm, it's energy, it's everything.
Well, I don't want to demean it, but it's sort of like your carnival.
Yes.
I mean, really, when you think about it.
Very much so.
But there's carnival in Trinidad and Tobago, there's carnival in Rio. Here it's Junkanoo.
It's Junkanoo.
What's the derivation of the word itself?
We believe it is a contraction of the name John Canoe. In the Bahamas, we say Junkanoo. My mother used to say the Johnny Canoes, but there are a lot of theories as to where the name came from.
But what does Junkanoo mean?
Well, like I said, we believe that it is the contraction of a name, John Canoe, and there was a John Coney on the West African coastline.
Okay, now we're getting close. Go ahead.
In the 1700s, who procured slaves for Europeans. And I don't quite understand what the connection would be, but there is one line of thought that believes that his name was given to the festival.
Now, there's a yearly cultural festival here, of course,
yes.
But you can find Junkanoo all around.
All around the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Yes, all around the Bahamas. That's right. It's in almost every major island, but the major parades are held in Nassau at Christmas time.
However, and let's call it what it is, if I'm having a party.
Yes.
And I make a phone call.
Yes.
And say, you know, I'd like this kind of food and this kind of drink.
Right.
And I'd also like a little Junkanoo.
Right.
People show up
right away in full costume with their musical instruments, and it's time to get the party started.
Or stay out of the way.
Yes.
Or move out of the way.
Absolutely.
Because that party moves.
Oh, the party will move. Absolutely.
What's the biggest surprise when people see it?
I think the music. I think the energy of the music, whether you intended to participate or not, your feet are going to start moving.
And you said the magic words, participate. You can actually get involved in the parade.
Very much so. You can get involved in a variety of ways. And, of course, there are parades that take place throughout the year also. So Junkanoo has become resident. Once upon a time, it was only at Christmas. Now it's at weddings, funerals. As you said, it's at special events, and there are street parades on Labor Day, Emancipation Day, that kind of thing.
So basically what you're saying is that with enough alcohol, even I could participate.
You don't need a lot of alcohol to participate, but of course that might enhance your performance.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's Junkanoo and then there's Junkanoo.
Right, absolutely.
What's the wildest thing you ever saw during one of those parades?
The whole parade is wild. The whole parade is wild. It's difficult to separate what is the wildest thing, because once those drums start, people kind of lose a lot of their sanity, their saneness, I want to say. And so the whole thing is wild.
So basically, you're the person at the Junkanoo Museum. Right? See, I had this whole idea that they should do, like, surprise drive-by Junkanoo raids, right? People should be, like, in their hotel room at their resort, minding their own business, all of a sudden knock. hello, and next thing, junkanoo, and the door just opens up and people walk in.
Yes, well, as you talk about one wild thing that I did was to put my junkanoo museum in the house in which I grew up. So there's junkanoo in the living room, the dining room, the kitchen, and on the back patio. And so the museum acquaints our visitors from abroad, and Bahamians also, with the history of the festival and that kind of thing.
So what you're saying is that your place, guests check in, but they can't check out without junkanoo.
Absolutely. By the time as they leave, I have officially declared them to be certified true junkanoos.
Junkanoos?
Yes. Oh, yes. They have to make junkanoo music, and then I proclaim them as true junkanoos.
Okay. Stupid question. Is there a junkanoo training process? Do people have to train to be junkanoos?
No. In most cases, it's instinctive, but it's interesting you should say that, because just today, the National Art Gallery begins a four-week junkanoo workshop that will train people in drumming and how to shake the bells and how to make the costume.
And how to knock on the doors of the resort going,
at 1 o'clock in the morning.
I think we have to do that. We should conspire on the show today to start Junkanoo Gorilla Drive-By Intrusions.
Sounds like a plan to me. Junkanoo, right? Flash mobs.
And then what you do is say, what happened to you? Oh, man, I was junkanooed.
Yes.
I was junkanooed. I was minding my own business, and I just got junkanooed.
Once you've experienced that, you will be junkanooed.
Okay, I think we have a deal. I think you and I have a deal. Arlene Nash, the co-founder and director of the Educulture Bahamas and the Junkin Museum in the house in which she grew up. Be careful when going to visit her, because you could get junkanooed. All right. We'll be back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Breezes Super Clubs Resort here in the Bahamas, where something tells me in the next couple of weeks there'll be knocks on the doors. Who is it? Junkanoo. We'll be back right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, we're just talking to Arlene from the Junkanoo Museum and getting people to be junkanooed, the festival that goes all year round. It just doesn't happen at Christmas time. But there's a lot of music that is particular to the islands, and there's a lot of new kind of music coming out with sort of a fusion of the traditional music and some new wave music. John, in our studio in New York, why don't you run a little bit of that for me? No, that is not a traffic jam in Cairo. I'm sorry, that's not the FDR Drive in New York. That's part of my next guest music. He's a founding member of a group called Colors. He's also a music lecturer at the College of the Bahamas. His name, Chris Justillian. Hey, Chris.
How you guys doing?
We're doing great. So that was you, right?
Oh, yeah, that's Colors. And that's music that I produced with Colors a couple of years ago.
Describe the music, I mean, the type of music we're talking, because I said fusion, was I right?
Yeah, well, junkanoo music has changed over the years, and I'm very happy to be a part of that change. Junkanoo music can be, in the past, could have been very closely related to what you would see in New Orleans at a street festival, very free, brass and drums. But we have the Gombe drums, of course, the Junkanoo drums, the goatskin drums.
And they have to be in everything.
Right.
Come on, everything.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But now we are arranging the music. When I came back from college at Berklee College of Music, I wanted to take another approach of organizing the music and putting more cohesive harmonies, more cohesive bass lines, along with the drums.
And by the way, when you say the Berklee College of Music, we're not talking about the University of California at Berklee now, are we?
No, we're talking about Berklee College of Music in Boston, Massachusetts.
Thank you very much. Most people don't get that, but I know you do, because
oh, yeah.
You went there. What did you bring back from that experience that you were able to integrate into the cultural music that you grew up with?
Well, I use a lot of the rhythms that we had in junkanoo. But what was missing, in my opinion, was that trained musicians that actually had arranged music, especially in the brass section. And what we're doing now, we're arranging a lot of the drum parts as well. A lot of the drumming is largely improvisational, but a lot of the groups now are playing specific beats to specific songs, and the horn parts are really well arranged, just as any big band jazz, but with Bahamian gumbe and Junkanoo rhythms.
And you take it, you know, you look at the word arranged, that presumes people are reading the music.
Yes.
Because if you look at the evolution of music in the islands, people weren't reading music. It was all intuitive.
Well, a lot of the Junkanoo groups are still doing it intuitively, but I think Colors is one of the groups definitely we rearrange all of our music. You know, we try to take the level at a very high level. You know, I think if you listen to our recordings, the brass sections especially, people know our music as soon as they hear us, because the music is just different from everyone else's.
For somebody coming to the Bahamas for the first time, or in my case, even for the 50th time, where would you tell me to go to listen to truly authentic Bahamian music?
That's a tough one. Unfortunately, music has suffered greatly in the Bahamas because of the influx of tourism, largely, and the proliferation of media. Our young people are very much exposed to a lot of the international music, reggae.
I mean, for me, the last thing I want to do when I come to the Bahamas is listen to Bob Marley or Chris Brown or Lady Gaga.
Yes.
I can get that anywhere.
Yes. Well, I think it's a process that we're going through. We're still a young nation. I started a course at the college called Introduction to Bahamian Music, that we are trying to even reintroduce Bahamian music and artists to our young people.
To be able to preserve it.
Yes, to preserve it and also to appreciate it. And the course has been oversubscribed every semester and is doing well. The goal now is to get it in the primary schools and get it on the airwaves so people can hear it all the time.
But just bottom line is, even though it's so tough to find it, where can I find it? Anywhere?
Well, there are shows on radio, like Charles Scott have a radio show every Saturday.
Yeah, but I'm talking about if I want to go listen to it live.
Listen to it live. Boy, that's a challenge. And unfortunately, I hate to say that, but it is a challenge in the Bahamas. But we are going to do some things. I know one of the things that I have planned is to open the Junkanoo Village, where we have live entertainment.
There you go.
Where we bring that back, and we have fire dancing and limbo dancing and a live band. I know at the fish fry from time to time.
See, you got to have the music at the fish fry.
Yeah.
Got to do that.
Yeah, but, you know, unfortunately, you get a lot of reggae and rap and the rest of it as well. But from time to time, you get some rake and scrape, which is good.
I got it. Chris Justillian, of course, the founding member of the group Colors, and you get the DVD anywhere you want, or the CD, I should say. And bottom line is, he'll be Junkanooing in your neighborhood soon, so be careful. He could be coming to your house. We'll be back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Breezes Super Clubs here in Nassau, in the Bahamas. Peter Greenberg taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. For those of us who grew up in New York and Manhattan in particular, of course, and being a Mets fan, we remember Shea Stadium. Well, down here there's another Shea Stadium. It's actually called Shea's Bistro, spelled with a C, not an S. And the owner of that is the chef, Chris Shea, and he's joining me now. Hey, Chris.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, when we talk about Bahamian food, and people will guess some of it. You know, it's conch chowder or fish chowder, but there are other things that people have never heard, like Johnny Cake and a Nassau Royale or a Nassau Royal, right?
Yes.
What is a Nassau Royal?
Nassau Royale is a liqueur that's manufactured here in the Bahamas, and it's good sipping straight up or on the rocks or added to flavor to your coffee for after dinner.
And of course, the national beer,
Kalik.
Yeah. And we like the national beer?
Oh, indeed.
Oh, indeed. Now, you've been cooking here since you were 5 years old, right? I mean, you go back way back.
Indeed.
To the Britannia.
Britannia, yes.
Now, of course, we now know that as...
Sun International, Atlantis.
Atlantis, yeah. How has the food changed? Because when you were, if I had to guess, and tell me if I'm wrong, but when you first started cooking over there, it was, you know, steak and mashed potatoes, and it was not a very evolved menu in those days.
In those days, it's more European.
Yeah.
The Bohemian Club, the Villa d'Este, the Café Bartonique, which is world famous, strictly classical French and continental cuisine.
Right. So, but nothing really out of the box.
Nothing out of the box, and slowly but surely we try to develop Bohemian cuisine to take it to the next notch. Bohemian cuisine, based on our ancestors, which were slaves, is full of carbohydrates, very little proteins. A basic Bohemian meal would be peas and rice, macaroni and cheese, potato salad, fried plantain, a piece of fried chicken, roast chicken, or fried fish.
Well, that doesn't sound very exciting.
No, it doesn't, but it's very, very tasty.
Although if it was done right, I'd go for the macaroni and cheese. I would admit that. But now, where have you evolved it to? Because if I go to your place, Shay's Bistro, am I going to see any of those items you just mentioned on the menu?
You will see some Bohemian dishes, but because it's called Chef Shay's Corner Bistro, it's themed on the French version of a bistro. And there's a collection of American, European, and Bohemian dishes. Cracked conch, minced lobster.
So I can get.
You can get, yes.
How about a fish fry?
You can get fried fish, or you can have fish with the French called fish en papillote, which means cooked in paper bag. Take a whole snapper, season it with julienne, peppers, onions, lime juice, tomatoes, seal it, stick it in the oven, and let cook its own juices. When you cut the foil,
that sounds, dynamite. That sounds so much better than macaroni and cheese and peas. It does.
Indeed.
In fact, because it is. What's the most unusual dish you have on your menu?
Unusual?
Something that I wouldn't expect to find there.
Well, everything you do, there's nothing really, really unusual because palates have changed.
When I say unusual, meaning I'm not talking about normal and abnormal. I'm talking about something that you wouldn't expect to find in the Bahamas at a restaurant in the Bahamas that you're doing.
Braised oxtail or braised short ribs. That's a classical version of a stew. Ossobuco, which is a braised veal shank.
Okay, now let me take you out of the corner bistro for a second.
Okay.
All right? You're just a regular Bahamian guy who's hungry. Mm-hmm. Where do you go? Where do you like to go to eat that's local, that's not in the brochure? And you can name names. It's okay.
Well, all the brochures have the...
I don't want brochures. I want nothing.
It says the world-famous fish fry here.
But where do you like to go?
I like to go to fish fry, relax, take my shoes off, sit back, drink a couple of collects.
Right, but any particular one?
Andrew's Hideout.
There we go. You're the second person today. You're the second person on the show who's mentioned that place.
Yeah.
We got to check that out.
Yeah. Willard is a nice guy. Goes overboard to make sure you're happy and well taken care of.
And what about conch?
Conch is the Bahamian delicacy. Tourists love it. When they find out the conch salad is a raw dish, they say, ooh, it's raw, you know. I say, but do you eat oysters? Yes, we do.
Clams.
Do you eat it raw? Yeah. Yes, it's the same thing. It's just a giant sea snail.
It's basically an escargot on steroids.
Indeed.
That's what it is. Come on, you know it.
Indeed. It's huge.
But you know what? With enough sauce, you can eat anything.
Of course.
So what do you put on the conch?
Lemon juice and we call them bird peppers or habaneros, you call them in the United States.
So you're going to kick it up a notch.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
Very spicy.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is it alive, it's spicy.
Indeed.
Oh, my God.
bit of julienne of onion and tomatoes, maybe a bit of bell pepper as well to make it more filling.
So basically, between a conch salad and a fried conch, you always go for the salad because you want it fresh.
Yes.
See, there's the key. Because if it's fried, it just tastes like chicken.
Or in Texas, they call it a chicken fried steak.
Oh, we're not going there. We are not. And you don't have that on the menu at all.
No, I don't.
And nor will you have that on the menu.
No, you don't.
All right. So we got to do the snapper in the bag.
Yes.
We got to go for that.
Yes.
Right? But the appetizer has got to be the conch salad.
Conch salad, yes.
All right. Chris Shea.
There's crab cakes as well.
Ah. How do you do the crab cakes?
Crab meat with fresh herbs, onions, peppers, and a little filler, molded, deep fried, with a calypso sauce.
Ah, see, the key is the calypso sauce.
Oh, yes.
It's always the calypso sauce. Chris Shea from Chris Shea's Corner Bistro,
yes,
right here in the Bahamas. Thanks for joining us. That music means we're out of time for this hour. A lot of people to thank. John Calabro doing the boards in New York. Kermit Romming handling it here at So Well. Gian East, Also on the staff here, Jordan Whitley is doing the field producing, Shelley Gontrowski, our senior producer, and of course, Hedda Smith and Christine Baitwaite, and the staff of Breeze's Super Clubs in the Bahamas. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week from another distant remote location with the Calypso Sauce. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.